Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and Thursdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can also pick it up on our numerous platforms, including Podomatic, iHeart, Spotify, and about a half a dozen others. Brought to you by Camp Constitution, which is, among other things, runs a week-long family camp, weekend retreat, and a ladies' retreat. And for more information, please visit our website, campconstitution.net. And by the way, for those of you who are listening in the greater Monticello area, where this station broadcasts, Monticello, Maine, I'll be speaking at the Union, I hope I get it, Union Baptist Church on Route 1 in Littleton, Wednesday night at 6 p.m. And it's a potluck. And my topic for all, by the way, my topic for all the presentations will be the racist roots of Planned Parenthood and its legacy of death. And so 6 o'clock at the Baptist Church, or the Union Baptist Church on Route 1. If you're coming from Holton, it's on the left, in Littleton, it'd be on the left-hand side as you're heading north. If you're heading south, of course, it'll be on the right-hand side. Also, I'll be at the next evening at also at 6 o'clock, although it's not a potluck, although they'll probably have little finger snacks and things at the Salvation Army Church right there in downtown Holton. And the address is 12, and I can't remember the name of the street, but it's easy to find. And then Friday morning, I'll be at Governor's Restaurant, Presque Isle, at 8 a.m. And that's come on in, order off the menu. And all of the presentations, again, will be based on my book, The Racist Roots of Planned Parenthood and Its Legacy of Death. Now, I'd like to, there's so much to talk about this. So many things have gone on, and I can only have a half hour here, a little less now. But talk radio, now, it's come a long way. Now, for the longest time, it was in the hands of conservatives. There's been some left-wing talk radio, but it's not very profitable. That's why they have to use NPR. They have to have taxpayer support. And of course, they get the big foundations that pay some of their fare as well. But talk radio, but it's not talk, conservative in the strict sense of the word. It's more neoconservative. In the 90s, for example, the average patriot would listen to talk radio, and you'd call in. And I know when you call in, they'll screen you. You got to stick to topic, but they almost would never talk about the globalism. They'll never talk about New World Order. They wouldn't be promoting homeschooling. If they did, they would poo-poo it for the most part. Oh, we can't do that. That's no solution. If you got and mentioned the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, or dare suggest that Federal Reserve has something to do with inflation, with the printing up of money, they will cut you off. They call you a kook, a conspiracy theorist. So what people were doing, and they were getting tired of it, as the word was getting out, organizations like the John Birch Society, Ed Griffin going on a national tour, and the Fed promoting his book, a lot of people were buying it and reading it. And so what people were doing is that they were turning to shortwave radio, like this incredible station, where you could actually talk about it. The problem was shortwave radio stations, you had to have you had to have a radio for it. You couldn't just sit in your car and tune it in as you're driving, or just pick it up on most people. If they had radios, they were just AM and FM. They weren't shortwave, although you could buy them, and it was gaining traction, and you could buy time with relatively short money. Excuse me, I got this nagging cough that doesn't seem to want to go away. Or what some people would do is they would buy time on small market radio stations on a weekend or even a weekday, try to get as many sponsors, and then they would make cassettes of the interviews they would do, and he would make hundreds of thousands of them and mail them out to everybody in cassettes. So that's how I would hear a lot of different radio show hosts, through people giving me cassettes. And but then as time went on, you know, it was a very demanding market. But as time went on, it seemed that certain terms, like, for example, the New World Order, you couldn't say that, but now you can. You could say the deep state. And many of these hosts that have been on a long time that were, and I'm going to put it this way, a lot of these hosts didn't necessarily disagree with you. They just were told by their bosses. And I'll give you an example. Back in the, I guess it was in the late 80s. Yes, late 80s. There was a speaking tour sponsored by a man from South Africa. His name was Tom Sankwalinda, and I happened to have hosted him in Greater Boston. And he was on a very popular talk show in Philadelphia, in studio, and I forget the name of the host. And he was talking about Nelson Mandela being a terrorist, being supported by the communists, the Soviets, et cetera, et cetera. And people were calling in. I mean, it wasn't like nobody was listening, you know, like bad radio. No one listens to bad radio. No one's making any money off this. But halfway through the show, he gets a call. The producer says, you cut it at the next break. Cut it. And they cut it just like that. He was off the air. No explanation given. A phone call was made, and the guy was off the air. I've experienced this, too. I actually knew a talk show host in Rutland, Vermont, Ed Anderson, who has since passed away. Ed was a great guy. He was from the Boston area, right, the Fall River area, moved up to Vermont. And he told me he moved up because he loves to ski. And there was a couple of winters that were mild and not much skiing going on when he moved up there. He had a very popular morning radio show, and he called him the poor man's Rush Limbaugh. And he would talk about local stuff, but also national stuff and international stuff. And I was a regular guest. And sometimes he'd even call me to get my take on something, you know. So not just somebody calls in every so often when we had a meeting going on at Rutland, but you know, he wanted commentary from me. And the week that he would have me on Saturday, he always had they would play the best of Ed Anderson. And so they would take 2 hours. He would just chew. And he said, I always would have you or any of the guests that are promoting what you're promoting from the John Birch Society, for example, would always be on this particular this Saturday. And he is doing pretty well for a few years. And then one day I was reaching out to him. I said, hey, I'm going to be in the area. He says, well, he said, hey, I got a call from either the manager of the station or the owner. And he said, hey, we love you, Ed, but no more talk about just local stuff here on in. And he wanted to keep his job. What could he do? And he's not that he agreed with that decision, but he didn't own the station. He didn't have that autonomy. There was another man. There was a guy down in Connecticut, and he used to have Rockin'. I'm trying to remember. He used to have a show on a college station in New Haven. Now, college stations are the colleges of 501c3, or it's some of them are private. I think this may have, I can't remember if it was a private station, a private college or not. It wasn't Yale, I tell you that. And he would do 2 hours a week. 1 hour he would play oldies, and then back then the oldies would be mostly 50s and 60s music. Now it's 80s and 90s. But and he was very popular. So 1 hour would be music, and 1 hour would be interviewing somebody. And I was another regular guest on his show. And he told me that one particular show, he had on a man that was talking about the Skull and Bones. And I don't remember who that was. It wasn't Anthony Sutton, who wrote a book about it. But the next day he gets a call, and it's the station manager. And the station manager said, hey, you can do all the music you want, but no more talk. We got some complaints, and cut right off, done. And I'm trying to remember, there was another gentleman. He was actually from Florida. He moved up to Boston, and I believe he ran against Hillary Clinton's brother for Congress. He didn't win. I don't know if he was in the primary. He was a Republican, I think. Well, he ended up doing a morning slot on a Saturday morning, WRKO in Boston. WRKO, Saturday morning is sort of dead air time, so-called. if you're advertising on a station like WRKO is, it's not a clear channel, but it's 50,000 watt, and it's one of the, I think it's the most popular talk radio in New England, and it has a pretty good signal. I mean, I can pick it up here in New Hampshire, 50 about 80, 80, 90, 90 miles away, and of course the signals do very well over the water, so it's broadcast out of Boston, so you can probably pick it up a lot on the east the coast, the East Coast. And then today with the iHeart, you can put it on your computer. You can pick it up anyway. But in those days, we didn't have that option. But anyway, but if you're buying time, you're buying ad space, they would say, hey, tell you what, we'll have you drive time on this show, drive time here, prime time, a couple of afternoon slots. And then we'll even give you a bunch of Saturday because like nobody's listening. So Saturday, we'll throw in another five or six ads for you. We won't charge you for the Saturday time. So this guy had a show on Saturdays, and his show was very popular. It was always callers, and same thing happened to him. He was taking calls, and he was having interesting guests, and they told him to tone it down, and he said okay, but he really didn't. Whatever that meant by toning it down, eventually he said, "We can't have you on anymore." And then there was another lady. She was Miss Massachusetts Eileen. Her name will come to me. She was a very popular TV personality, Eileen Prose. And same thing, she did I think she ended up taking over from this guy, and she did the same thing. She was having guests that were not necessarily approved by what we now call the deep state, and she took they took her show off the air. So this is stuff that happens that was happening back in the 90s and early 2000s. Rush Limbaugh, I know he was a typical example of a corporate statist media guy. I remember during the height of the NAFTA debate, Pat Buchanan wanted to buy some time on his station. It's probably pretty expensive to oppose NAFTA. He wouldn't allow it. Now that's his prerogative, but he's the guy supposed to be a principal conservative supporting Bill Clinton's agenda. And then he would ridicule certain things. The Trilateral Commission used to do a little spoof about if a Trilateral Commission member A was driving from Boston to Chicago, and it would just make a joke of it. He even one time, and by the way, he had good instincts. I remember one time he was automatically against the there was a Mexican bailout that happened under the Clinton administration, and they found some money somewhere, some kind of slush fund, and all of a sudden they're bailing him out, and he was against it. Well, within a few days he gets a call. He actually got a call from Alan Greenspan, who was, of course, the a former libertarian gold guy, became total deep state instrument. And he told him about why it was a good thing. And he changed his position on it. And then he lied about it. But as time went on, he was a little more sympathetic to the concept of deep state, even though he knew about it when he was started out. I think it was in, he was a PR guy for the Kansas City baseball team, Royals. And then he got to talk radio. I think he moved to California. And he was. He would say, and I remember that the New American Magazine interviewed him in his early days, and he said, yeah, conspiracy isn't good radio. In other words, no one wants to listen to it, and you don't sell stuff. And again, it's all about, you're on a commercial station. You got to get people who are going to buy ads on your show, or you have no show. I kind of get that, but once a week, can you mention it 5 minutes? Out of 4 hours a day, can you give it 5 or 10 minutes a week? You think you could squeeze that in? That's a lot of airtime you have to fill. And nope, wouldn't talk about it. And if you called in, now there are some people who would bait and switch. They would call in and say, I want to talk about why Bill Clinton's a jerk. And then you'll talk about the CFR and the New World Order and click. Okay. So I can understand you call up for one reason and you change your topic. I think you're cut off, but he would really. And so these guys, this is what we were up against. But things have changed a whole lot. And I'll give you an example of what's happening in Boston. There are two talk show hosts that I think are the major talk show hosts in New England. In the morning, it's Jeff Cooner. Now, Jeff's on from 6 a.m. till 10 a.m., Mondays through Fridays. And Howie Carr. Now, Howie has been a fixture in Boston for many, many years. He a columnist for the Boston Herald. When it, he still is a columnist for the Herald, but the Herald has gone from conservative hyphen neoconservative that at least gave gave space for people like Pat Buchanan and Thomas Sowell. Now it's basically a left wing. I call it Boston Globe Light. And although to their credit, they did cover our flag case pretty well. They even gave us a couple of front page stories. But it's the editorial content has changed dramatically. Just like the union leader in New Hampshire, the Manchester Union Leader, it used to be conservative. They actually endorsed Biden, I mean, in 2020. That's something fundamentally wrong with any so-called conservative newspaper that would endorse someone as wicked as Biden, knowing his track record. So Howie started off with on the Jerry Williams show. Jerry was a longtime lefty, you know, supporting forced busing. But I think he knew where the bread was buttered on talk radio. So he started leaning a little bit more to the conservative side. He was very much against, there was a Proposition 2.5 that would cap property taxes statewide. And he was behind that and played a key role. And he had a lot of guests on that were people like fiscal type conservatives. And Howie Carr used to do a lot of co-hosting. And then at some point, I don't recall when, he became a full-time talk show, and he's been on since the 90s. He's moved to Florida, but he still has, he's still on here in Boston. He comes up to Boston every so often. And again, very popular guy. He was a Trump supporter. I remember where he would poo-poo conspiracy theories. You know, in other words, there are a lot of conspiracy theories that are absolute nonsense. And I think I've always contended that these things were made up by the deep state to make the real ones look ridiculous, you know. So, but he would even say that his mother, he said, oh, my mother says this about the Rockefellers. And he would kind of imitate them, you know, like an old woman saying stuff. And so the mom was up on things, but Howie would poo-poo it. So I would call in every so often. And one time, actually, I have a friend of mine, Chris McCarthy, that has a radio show down in the Fall River area of Massachusetts. And any stories that were coming out of Fall River, New Bedford, that Howie would talk about usually emanated from Chris. So back in the mid-90s, I had access to about 15,000 copies of a book called Teddy Bear. It was one of the early books exposing Chappaquiddick. And these books, at that point, I really couldn't do much with them. There wasn't a big demand. It was years after the incident. And although they came back in demand after Kennedy died and when the movie Chappaquiddick came out at big time. I mean, but so... Chris took about three or four cases. I think they're like 40 in a case, gave them to Howie Carr, and Howie would mention, oh, somebody found these books up in their grandfather's attic and they're in good shape and be the fifth caller. And he'd get them all out. And I got a chance to meet Howie at a private function. And, you know, I liked the guy and I listened to him. And in fact, during the lockdown, he was a real, he was very much against, the shot and all the Black Lives Matter nonsense. And he was really a voice of sanity, just like Tucker Carlson. And that's where I started because, you know, I wasn't traveling as much. So I had a little more time to put on the radio and local radio and also put on the local news, the evening news. I wasn't going to meetings and events as much. Nobody was hosting anything. So that's what I do. And so I had to come to it to have a better appreciation of him. But, and he was a, rightfully against the left-wing governor, Republican governor, Charlie Baker, and he used to spoof him, Charlie Parker. He even had a little time updating Charlie Parker, and he would imitate him. And but the something and Jeff Deal. Jeff Deal was a state senator. I don't know if he was a state rep. Don't know if he was a state senator, but he ran for U.S. Senate. He got the Republican nomination, and he was the fill-in for Howie Carr. They were buddies. Also, the head of the Massachusetts Republican Party, the chairman, Jim Lyons. Jim was a state rep from North Andover, and was a regular guest on the show, and he was always a light to him, and they were buddies. Then he turned on him. I mean, big time. Where he spent most of his time not just trashing these two men. And, you know, you can criticize people. Deal lost the lost the election. And then in 2020, he ran for governor. against the Healey, a left-wing former attorney general, far-left lesbian leftist activist. And that he didn't win, and there were some things that maybe could have been done better. I'm not getting into the intricacies. And I know Jeff not too well, but I've met him a number of times. In fact, I met he was at an event that I was speaking recently with his wife, and I've known Jim, and I think he's a pretty good guy. So he was calling him basically Jim Jones Lyons, the Kool-Aid cult, and all of the people that were being supported by the conservative, the non-rhinos. He was trashing. I mean, he wasn't just he wasn't just criticizing them for things they've done, but just insulting them. Kool-Aid cult. I mean, wackos, just nasty stuff that you would expect somebody from the left-wing paper like the Boston Globe to do. And it was just amazing. And meanwhile, Jeff Cooner, they've now Jeff and Howie now have a feud. Jeff actually called him out, said, come on the show, let's have a debate. I'll give you 3 minutes to every one my minute. Call them Howie the Howard the Coward and so forth. So it's just very interesting how things have developed there in talk radio. And I thought maybe this was just a good shtick to get listenership, but I think it's sincere. And so talk radio, again, the corporate radio, not stations like this one. This is true free speech radio. But the corporate media, and one thing you'll notice, if you might be listening to this, your favorite host, and he might be, or she might be really speaking some serious truths, and then there's an ad, commercial, and the commercial's for the CDC, get the jab, or it's from, take this drug, take that drug. I would say about half the ads, if not more. I don't know, there's got to be some probably has done a scientific research on this, just listen to as many of these ads, whether it's YouTube, whether it's your Fox News or Newsmax, or whether it's, of course, all the other CNN, ABC, those are all, most of the ads are run by drug companies. So if a good chunk of your ad revenue is coming from drug companies, it's a safe bet that you're not spending a lot of your time going after drug companies. And so anyway, this is why I think stations like this really need to be supported. The airwave is free, but it's not free to set up a station, to keep it going, to keep it in operation. And everybody on this station, they buy their time, I believe they buy their time. And it's relatively inexpensive to get time on the air. But you look at YouTube and how much they censor. I just uploaded a video. It was a video of Jesse Jackson. And it was in New York City, 1998, and he's praising Trump to the hilt for hiring blacks, especially minorities, but especially blacks. And he's been a friend of the black community for years and so forth, just giving him all kinds of accolades. And it's kind of funny how much they hate him today. I also have what I'm going to be uploading, and I have it on another channel, another YouTube channel, which I don't use. I just use it to as a backup, but it's Trump in the ring with Mike Tyson when Tyson won his championship. It was the fight it was at a Trump casino, and there was all of the Muhammad Ali was there, all of the top people in the boxing world, Don King, the promoter with the legendary hair, and they're all praising Don to Mr. Trump. They're calling him, wait a minute, I thought he was a racist. I thought he hated black people. Isn't that a narrative? And now just, and I'm kind of drifting away from what the radio was talking about, but I'm segueing into it. Trump was in Ohio giving a speech, and he used the term bloodbath. And so, oh my goodness, the left, Joe Scarborough, he's calling for a bloodbath if he doesn't get reelected. Oh, he's horrible. He's a nut going on. Well, Scarborough posted something on X and Musk called him out for it. He said, that's not what he said, and you know it. He said, first off, what happened in January 6th was not a bloodbath. He said, far from it. One person was killed in the Capitol, a white Trump supporter. A white woman shot by a black racist cop who gets promoted after she's dead. And there was a young woman, young, probably 30-ish, beaten to death by a couple of Capitol police. I mean, you saw the footage. It's pretty brutal. And I think somebody had a heart attack. Right. And so there were three Trump supporters that died. None of them were beaten by fellow Trump mob, the fellow Trump supporters. And so Scarborough had to take, he took his thing down. But he used the term, Trump used the term bloodbath to describe what would happen economically if Biden's policy of these electric cars comes to fruition. He wasn't talking about killing people or murdering people if he doesn't get elected. It was a lie. And they just repeat the lie. It's really mass psychology. In fact, Yuri Bezmenov, he was a former KGB agent. And while I never met him, I was supposed to host a speaking engagement of his back in 1991. And he had a stroke. At the time, he was living in Canada. And I think he's since passed away. But he was interviewed by Ed Griffin, the same man who authored Creature from Jekyll Island, who I interviewed back when he was promoting his book on his book tour. And Bezmenov talks about long-term psychological warfare and mass psychosis and just how to promote the big lie. And it's very, and so somebody posted it and Elon Musk retweeted it and it got 20 million views in no time. So more, if you want to get your stuff to go viral, put it under the eyes of Elon Musk. That will happen. Also want to point out Bibi, who was the daughter of the late, great Barbara from Harlem. She's coming into her own. Barbara did a wonderful job raising her, and Bibi's her own woman. She's not just mouthing the same things her mom did because that's all she's just chirpy. She is a really well-versed person. Mom trained her well. And she did a video somewhere. I think it was in New Jersey. And she's speaking at a group, and it was like a round robin discussion. And a couple of YouTube, what do they call it? Not reactor, YouTubers that react to videos. And so they have excerpts of her speech and they comment on it. And it's gone viral. And, she got a million or two views, at least that many, probably more. So I got a hold of her and I said, hey, I liked it. Can I find the original one? I couldn't find it. So they sometimes rename the video so you can. They didn't know who she was, these two YouTube groups. And I let them know who she was. And there's, oh, she should run for president. She should be, Trump should do this. And she needs to get on this show and that show. So anyway, it's great. Because voices like hers would not hurt 20 or 30 years ago. It would be impossible unless you call up a radio show and if you're at their mercy, let you on for 30 seconds and cut you off. So again, that's why free speech, true free speech, is very important. And it's also important that people support stations like WBCQ. By the way, I'm not giving a plug because I'm getting paid to do it. I'm giving a plug because stations like this need support from patriots. And not just support the station, but also share the information you hear. If you don't like this show, fine, but there's plenty of good shows on there that are worthy of support. And just let other people know that stations like this exist. And you can also pick this up on your computer. You don't have to have a shortwave radio these days, although it's a good thing to have. So we're almost running out of time. I want to thank you for listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. Again, the show was heard on Mondays at 7 p.m., Thursdays, 7:30 p.m., both Eastern Standard Time. And we encourage you to visit our website, campconstitution.net, as well as our Facebook page. We have an Amazon account with some great books. So until next week, may God richly bless you, and thank you for listening.